ICANN 47 CCGNSO meeting day one, part three, July 16th, 2003, from 1600 to 1800 in Hall 1B.
Okay, let's make a start, because you've all gone really quiet now I've announced we're going to restart soon. So let me just recap on our agenda for this afternoon, because there's been one minor change. Excuse me. Thank you. Sorry, it carries. Okay, so the observant amongst you will notice that this morning we jumped over our Framework of Interpretation Working Group update. I could say that that's because we wanted to spend more time on finance, but the truth is my bit of paper went over that bit, so I thought we'd done it. But anyway, you would have seen in the GAC that Keith gave the update to the GAC, and rather than go over that same update again, which is, as I understand it, is the update that would also be presented to the CCNSO, we thought that we'd just start with a pause to see if anyone wanted to make any comments or questions on that. When we've done that brief interlude, we're going to move on to our discussion on multi-stakeholder models of country code governance, and Carolina has very kindly volunteered to chair that session. From that, we're going to go straight into a discussion around the IDN PDP and the voting with regard to that. We have then the ATRT2 group coming to visit us. You will notice that they sent out an amazingly long list of questions. We are not going to try to answer those questions within the 15 minutes we have allotted, but rather we'd like to use that to identify for the group what our key issues are from a CC perspective. Then we're going to go straight in from that into an update on the Domain Name Industry Association from Adrian Kindris. I am really going to do my best to ensure we finish on time. I've already had a special request that we finish on time in order that people can get changed in various hotels for the cocktails. So I'm on my usual mission to try to get us to complete on time. So without further ado, the FOI update. Keith, did you want to add any colour or further detail to that?
I guess just to follow on, in a way it works out quite fortunate for the CCNSO to have missed having the same presentation twice, so hopefully everybody saw the presentation in the GAC room. I think just to remind everybody that we have had a lot of difficulty within the working group on the topic of revocation in terms of finding... I think we've had consensus for quite a long time, but a varying consensus, but we've finally achieved a unanimous position on it, and it's really of great relief to me that we have, because everything else that we've done right the way through has been unanimous in the working group, and I think that's a testament to the fortitude of the people to weary your way down and get to that level. So having done that, it means that we are now ramping up our activities for that working group, and we will be finishing our work over the next meeting or two. So it is time to take notice and make your views known, because this is getting to the last stages of consultation and discussion from our community and out to the public consultation processes. So really, I'm just seeking any questions since the CCNSO didn't have an opportunity to ask questions in the GAC room.
Anyone? Okay. And how do people get engaged? How do people get comments? Where do they find the materials? And what happens next?
What happens next is if anyone wants to follow the issue, the issues more closely, the working group is meeting on Thursday for 3 hours, 9 a.m. to noon. And we will be finessing the final wording of the report on revocation and putting it out for public comment. So that public comment period will be possibly closed even by the time we get to Buenos Aires. So it is important to keep an eye out on it. Of course, we'll announce on the members list and so on at the time.
Okay. Thank you very much, Keith. Let me then hand over to Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Good afternoon. Okay, this is the beginning of a panel session that, as you might see, we have a wide extent of examples from different CCTLDs in different regions and definitely different models of multi-stakeholderism or how to look at multi-stakeholderism from the perspective of a CCTLD. You might be well aware that in the discussions around internet governance, the CCTLDs as part of the technical community, they embrace, the technical community embraces multi-stakeholderism for other organizations, and in some respect, some CCTLDs are also beginning to rethink their own models and how they are themselves working in a multi-stakeholder fashion. So multi-stakeholderism together with enhanced cooperation, which basically includes more the presence of governments in internet governance, is one of the hottest debates these days, and so I really look forward to seeing these experiences that our colleagues will share around the issue of multi-stakeholderism. But we will first have a presentation by Kisa from Kienam Lee. He will start making a presentation on internet governance in Korea and how it's working these days and how they are working for the future. So, Kienam Lee, you have 5 minutes, please. Thank you very much.
Yes. I would like to present the current status of internet governance in Korea and way forward. My presentation consists of three parts. First, you can see overall structure of Korea's internet governance model. The second part shows challenges we faced and how we dealt with them. And I'm going to finish this presentation with our basic principle on internet governance and our future plans. This slide shows the brief history of internet governance in Korea, focusing on which organization was in charge of internet addresses. In the first period, KAIST, one of the leading academies in Korea, established KR League as a department in it for the first time. The KR service started in this period. In 1994, KR League department in KAIST was transferred to national organization, NIA, National Informatization Agency, to facilitate registration process and promote the use of Korean CCTLD. In 1999, KR League was separated from NIA and started to stand its own feet until 2004, when Act on Internet Address Resources was put into force. After that, KR League changed its name to NIDA, National Internet Development Agency, and came to function as a full-fledged governmental agency according to the law. And finally, in 2009, a structure of Korean government was reorganized. NIDA was consolidated in KISA with other two organizations. In the process you just saw, there were some challenges. As Acton Internet Address Resources was put in force in 2004, government took the full charge of internet address, which caused some concerns. There was a view that government-driven internet governance model might break the balance between diverse actors, leading to endanger the multi-stakeholder environment in Korea. There has been a lot of efforts to deal with this issue, and as a result of continuous discussion, we achieved internet governance model that we have now. Many fora were created where many actors can stand and speak on an equal basis by different entities. For example, now there are not only internet address policy committee created by the law, but also network neutrality forum created by civil society and other forums as well. Nowadays, one of the most active fora is KIGA, Korea Internet Governance Alliance, which gathers experts from diverse entities such as government, business sector, academia, and civil society, and allows them to discuss the internet governance issue in a free manner. As you can see from this, there has been some challenges until we finally established this model. But this challenge also can be recognized as a great opportunity which Korean internet community benefited from. Through this process, we could create a new and more advanced internet governance model. We have been actively working on internet governance issues and continuously developing our own model, as you saw in the previous slides. At World Telecommunication ICT Policy Forum, WTPF, in last May, Korea presented its basic principle on internet governance that we support multi-stakeholder model. This is recognized as a major achievement for us because this statement is based on many discussion results at diverse fora I mentioned before. Based on this principle, we are making efforts in national level, such as expanding issues, scopes of KIGA, holding events to share views about internet governance, and increasing interaction among diverse stakeholders. And we are also preparing global events such as Asia-Pacific Regional Internet Governance Forum this September, Conference on Cyberspace this October, and finally, ITU Plenipotentiary Conference next year. I am looking forward to your active participation in this event. This is the end of my presentation. In case you have any questions, please contact me at this mail address. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. Okay, so after this introductory presentation on the internet governance model of a CCTLD in Korea, the case of .kr, of KR and KIGA, we will now start with the case studies or the presentations regarding the particular question that is addressing our panel session today, which is related with multi-stakeholderism and what are the opportunities, challenges, and threats ahead for CCTLDs working in a multi-stakeholder fashion. And I will invite Debbie Monahan from .nz now to make her presentation again in 5 minutes. Thank you, Debbie.
All right, so the brief was 5 minutes, three slides. So I'll do hopefully less than 5 minutes, and I did more than three slides. No. basically the .nz model. It's a shared registry system, but with a slight variation over some people. You'll see three different names on this particular slide, the one in the middle being Internet NZ. So the Internet New Zealand is an incorporated society owned by its members in New Zealand, and that holds the delegation for the .nz domain namespace. Back in 2002, they set up a new structure, which is represented here. There's two subsidiary companies that Internet NZ owns. One is the Domain Name Commission Limited, which I head, and the DNC is essentially the regulator. We set the policies, and we, if you like, have the responsibility for operating the domain namespace, the .nz domain namespace, on behalf of Internet NZ. So we, in our policy setting, are very much, we involve the public, and it's all based around open and consultative approach to our policy setting because there's no legislation that governs the space. And then the registry company, NZRS, is headed by Jay Daly, who a number of you will know, and they actually do the technical function. Now, because there's no legislation, essentially we've got a whole series of policies and procedures and agreements that govern the space, and the registry is bound to a service level agreement that the Domain Name Commission oversee. So we actually make sure that they actually meet the required standard. The registry reports to the Domain Name Commission on as per the contract or the agreement, and also whenever we actually have a question. Now, there are challenges around this model. The fact is that three entities can create confusion. Who is responsible for what? And I'm pretty sure if I was to ask many people in this room who have spoken to myself, Jay, Keith, and others who attend, why there's three different logos, three different names and other such things, how does it all fit together? How do you actually explain it? I mean, it's hard enough explaining it to people who are in the industry, let alone trying to explain it to others. And there are also other matters that can come up where, if you like, some of the boundaries of responsibilities are kind of blurred, and you've got to actually try and work out how to best handle those. That said, though, there are far more benefits than there are concerns. And the clear distinction between policy and the technical operations means that policy is actually developed in an open manner and in a way which actually best fits the needs of the local internet community. One example of this is that .nz has IDNs. We have a Maori language which has Maori macronized vowels. Now, the registry has no financial reason for implementing those, but we did it for a policy position because Maori is an official language of New Zealand. We also have an independent person overseeing the performance of the registry and publishing anything that actually was a breach of the agreement. And Internet NZ has a really key role in the wider public good of promoting an open and uncapturable internet, and they're free to focus on that, leaving the .nz operations to their subsidiaries. But I think the key thing too is that in our model we actually have a shared ownership. Internet NZ owns the two subsidiaries, which means we share the same principles and operate to the same standards. And that's my very quick oversight with three different domain names and web addresses to go to.
Thank you very much, Debbie. Well, now's the turn of... we will have a last bit of minutes, hopefully 20 minutes for questions and answers, but I would rather we go first through the 8 presentations and then we have some questions and commentaries from the floor. But now it's Demi Gejko's presentation from .br. Yes. Thank you, Demi.
Thank you, Carolina.
Sorry?
Okay. This is a short presentation about the model we have actually in Brazil. Okay. No. The second slide. The very beginning. More in the beginning. The next one. Yes, okay. The .br was delegated in 89. The Brazilian connection to the network, international networking, was done in 88. But the steering committee, that is the main political body for internet governance in Brazil, was created in 95. and was reformulated two or three times. The actual definition of the steering committee was done in 2003, and it keeps the same format until now. The purpose of the steering committee is to integrate and not regulate internet activities and services in Brazil. Basically, it oversights the registry of the country code top-level domain.br and the allocation of IP addresses, and also has a lot of other actions in benefit of the internet community, the local internet community. As an example, we run internet exchange points and produce material about security and statistics on the internet in the country. The next. Oh, I have to change also. The way we are doing this in Brazil is we have a bicameral structure. The steering committee is the political part of the process, and we have the operational part is done by the NIC, the Network Operations Center.br, as you know. And the basic functions of NIC is to do the things in the physical world. We registered the .pr, we allocated numbers, and so on and so on. All the money we get comes basically from the registry services, and we have also some revenue from the IP distribution, but it's marginal compared to the revenue of registries of names. And how we are a thick registry. We don't have licensed registrars. Anyone can be registered in Brazil, but we don't offer any special conditions for them. They have the same cost as an end user to register under .pr. Then basically the money from the registrations comes all to the Brazilian Network Information Center, and then we can spend money doing things like 20 internet exchange points to the country and 10 years of statistics and so on. So, but this is not for this presentation. Maybe tomorrow we can discuss this a little bit more. Next. The steering committee, in his actual composition, has 21 members, and the government has 9 of them. Then it's not majority at the board. The 9 representatives from the government are indicated, are placed by the different ministries and so. There's the list over the screen. And we have 12 members from the civil society that are elected each 3 years. Then we have elections to choose these representatives basically by their own constituencies. We are just in the middle of one of this process, and we'll have the change of these 12 members in the beginning of the next year. Then the majority of the steering committee is basically the people from civil society. Just to show more or less the activities we can do with the money we receive from the registry, we have under the NIC-BR, these are 5 small boxes. One is the registry that gets the money for the other halls. CERT-BR is a security emergency response team. It delivers a lot of statistics about spam, about phishing, and also is a focal point for information about violations in security. The CETIC is one center that deals with statistics and collects data about how the internet is doing in the different regions of the country. Brazil is a very big country, and we have many and a big regional differences, and CETIC is collecting that. The CEPTOR is a research center that deals with courses in IPv6, deals with the distribution of the network time protocol for have all the right time for all the servers. Anyone can use the network time protocol for free, and also runs the internet exchange points. We are quite big in this area, and in many of these exchange points, in 18 of them, we have mirrors of root servers, and we also host the regional office of the W3C, and we support their activity also on that. Just to finish the thing, we have a national law in telecommunications that was done after the creation of the steering committee, this law separates what is internet as an added-on value service from the telecommunication infrastructure. There is a lot of struggle in this right now. We hope to keep this separation in a good shape, but it's not clear. The steering committee, as I said, is the political body. He did an enunciation of 10 principles, the 10 commanders for the, keeping the internet open and free and so. We have an Information Access Act that provides access to all the governmental data since 2012. We obviously follows also the WTO open data principles. We have two things that are in discussion right now, the privacy and personal data protection and the civil rights framework. It's voting in this proposal right now, I suppose, this day, today. The civil rights framework will encompass three basic issues in the area: neutrality, privacy, and the correct responsabilization of the chain in the internet. And just to finish, the 10 commanders are over the table. I will not read all them, but this was the seed from the seed for the framework for internet in Brazil. The framework, the legal framework. We hope that they will go forward in this votation today. And this is all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Demi, for the presentation. And now we are going to Dot TZ's case with Abibu Natanye, who is going to present Tanzania's model.
As the moderator said, my name is Abibu. I'm from .tz Registry in Tanzania, in East Africa. I will present the multi-stakeholder model for the case of Tanzania. And just a briefing about the registry and TISNIC as a company. It was registered in 2006, but became operational in 2009. Currently, it has 75 staff members. The ones in red were recruited in March this year. Initially, we were 5. And we have 12 SLDs with 7,200 plus domains. And the delegation was non-contested in April 2010. We have deployed the IPv6 DNS key, and also we are hosting the FROOT copy in our office. We are working towards full 3R model, and we have 32 plus accredited registrars. And among these one is ICANN accredited. We handle our disputes through WIPO. We have a memorandum of understanding with the WIPO. In terms of governance model, well, it's multi-stakeholder, and how it is, it's a bit different from other countries because you have variant types of multi-stakeholder depending on the members that are included in terms of the government of the registry. So I will present the TISNIC case. TISNIC is independent and self-regulated. It is a not-for-profit but member-based, that is through PPP, public-private partnership, and the membership is open. The founding members are the regulator, representing the public sector, and the Association of ISPs, representing the private sector. Just as an update, we are making some efforts to have an ISOC chapter, which, if interested, can be a member of TISNIC to represent the end users. The Policy Advisory Committee or board is equally represented by all members. And just as an example, from the regulatory part, representing the public, we have one member from the regulator itself, one member from the ministry, and two other members from other government agencies. And the establishment of TISNIC was a result of facilitative and consultative operating mode of the regulator. As for opportunities, we find that all the members or all the categories of internet users are inclusively and through the private or public sector in terms of management of a CCTLD. And we find that with this multi-stakeholder model, there is a possibility of development of supportive policies and regulation And to clarify on this, so far there is a new legislation. It's called the Electronic and Postal Communication Act, which requires every entity within Tanzania to use a .tz domain. And at the government level, there is a circular that requires every government institution to use a .tz domain. And also the multi-stakeholder model makes TISNIC to be involved in policy, regulations, and capacity building initiatives. And so far, we have been participating effectively in reviewing the national ICT policy. And also, we have been involved in discussing some new bills on transactions. So this multi-stakeholder model is giving TISNIC involvement in the national policies, but again, the government passes some legislations which are supportive to development of the CC. And also, as I told you, there is an element of possible expansion in terms of more members because the membership is open. And so far, there is a strong collaboration among the current members. As for challenges in terms of governance, so far we don't have any major challenges apart from the sustainability issues. But I have just highlighted some possible general challenges, which could be the dominance challenge and the governance challenges. Dominance challenge in the sense that when you start the CC operations, you might not be sustainable and find that one member might be providing some funds. And under that circumstance, if you don't have good governance, then one member can dictate the terms. And from that point, the register cannot operate well. And that's all I have. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Habibu, and thank you very much also for respecting the time. And now it's Roloff Meyerstern with the case of .NLSIDN. Thank you, Roloff.
Okay. So what do we do to go to the next, please?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first a clarification. The fact that is that the SIDN logo is in the center, does it mean that we think that we are the center of gravity or the most important party in this graph? What we try to do is arrange stakeholders and parties that we collaborate with along themes. I should probably start by explaining that SIDN is an independent organization, so we have no formal ties with governments. We are not a membership organization. We do both the policy and the technical functions, and it's all in this one organization called SIDN, a not-for-profit organization. In fact, it's a Dutch foundation. We have a supervisory board, which is also comprised of people who are not representing any specific organization, but that are selected on their personal expertise and experience and qualities. That said, we collaborate with numerous organizations that are stakeholders. I think that the group that is most close to us in our day-to-day business is the group of registrars. We have quite a lot of them, almost 1,800, 1,750, I think, of which only a small group consists of ICANN accredited registrars. We have recently, about 2 years ago, agreed with them to organize themselves into an association of registrars, which is a formal organization that we finance on a year-to-year basis and a three-year contract. I'll get back to that. We, on the theme of security, we closely collaborate with organizations like our National Cybersecurity Center, but also the Anti-Phishing Working Group, for instance. Policy and internet governance, we, for instance, work together with in the IGF structure, in the ICANN structure center, with our local internet community here within the CCNSO. On technical issues, I'm sure that there are some names that you'll recognize. Considering our role and responsibility, so that's in fact our legitimacy, of course there's a lot of contact and collaboration and working together with our government and contacts with political parties to make sure that the role that we have is the role that we keep. Now, what are some of the challenges that we are faced with? Especially in the field of policy making, there, and I'm sure that most of you have the same experience, there are vastly different interests, different stakes, different opinions. The registrars are most involved. They have the strongest voices. It's not a voice, but voices, if it's on policy, both policy directly aimed at our registrars, but also, for instance, our strategy of diversification. And although we created this association of registrars because we found that we could never do it right, there was always a group of registrars that would have an opposite opinion from what we were doing, whatever direction we went. We have just transited this problem to this association of registrars. So on the field of policy making, I think our largest challenge is getting an advice on policy from our registrars that we can really follow up without a significant chunk of our registrar community being upset. Our major themes on our naming policy we decide upon through what we call domain name debates, and there we try to get a good representation of our local internet community present. We prepare certain themes that we want to discuss with them, and that can be from dispute resolution systems or mediation or a change in the privacy policy of our WHOIS. And we try to get a rough consensus-based advice, which we, in most cases, I think all cases, in fact, so far, then implement. In the technical field, one of the important challenges we're facing, and that was again last week even, is abuse, DDoS attacks, spoofing, botnets, attacks on our websites. Another interesting issue since we implemented DNSSEC is the validation. We found that ISPs are fairly reluctant to take that up, and for us that was a new sector where we had to establish direct contacts. It's working well now, but slowly but surely. On the most important governance aspect, our independence and our legitimacy, I think one of the best protections against that, or to ensure that, is our governance structure, like I've just explained. Something like almost 7 years ago, upon our initiative, we signed a covenant with our government, which is in fact about ensuring the uninterrupted functioning of the domain, but in which we also took up our governance structure and clauses about our independency. And I think that is one of the best protections of our present structure. And of course, I think you would all agree that it all starts with being very, very good in what you do. That's probably the best protection of your role and responsibility. And whatever structure you have, if you fail to run a good business, then I think in the end you will lose your role and you will lose that responsibility. So what are the benefits and the results? We remain an independent organization with what we judge, and not all stakeholders would agree upon that all the time, but with adequate stakeholders' influence. We have a solid position with more than enough government support, I think. There's a growing and broader growing recognition of our expertise in the DNS field. We try to add value on, you could say, internet governance themes like openness, access, security, and privacy, especially within our own country. And we have established a nationwide but also international broad collaboration on operational, technical, and security themes.
Thank you very much, Roloff. Now it's Giovanni Seppia's turn to present the model of .eu. Thank you, Giovanni.
Thank you, Carolina. Yes, I'm going through the multi-stakeholder model at .eu, and so what we have done is that we have divided our stakeholders into three groups, and this is for what we, let's say, conduct as regular consultations with these three different stakeholder groups. So basically the first group is our customers, and mainly those are the accredited registrar of .eu and of course the European Union domain name industry, and then the European Union registrants, including SMEs and trademark holders. We have also the second group where we have the European Union institutions and then ICANN, and this is a special group for us, and I'll tell you briefly about it. And then we have the peers, which for us are the European and the International Domain Name Registry Community, which is very important to us because we always try to learn from other best experiences. But also, we try to make sure that any change in our policies and procedures reflect what is the best practice, what are the standards at the international level. So we conduct regular exercises of consultations with these three different groups, of course, at different levels. What are the challenges for us? First of all, we are a special registry. We are a registry under contract, quite a strict contract with the European Commission. We are basically the operational branch of the European Commission for the management of the .eu top-level domain. And therefore, when I talked about multi-stakeholderism and talking about consulting with our regulators, that means consulting with the European Commission, but at some point also liaising with the European Parliament and the Council. For us, that is a regular education process, because in the 7 years we have been at the management of the .eu top-level domain, there have been some changes at the Parliament level, but also at the European Commission level. And sometimes the people you have in front of you, they start to ask you, what is DNS? What is a domain name? And those are the people that are supposed to tell you what to do. They're supposed to produce regulations about you. So it's a sort of a permanent education process. And then the challenge is also that we have 28 countries as of the 1st of July this year that they are looking at us. They are looking at what we are doing, and at some point they call on us to, you know, for very practical things like sorting out specific issues on some domain names. But also, let's say they are calling on us because in these countries we must have one accredited registrar in each of the European Union member states. And that is why, in order to, let's say, make sure we achieve this goal, we have a distributed account management network, which is distributed over four offices, and we have one account manager speaking the language of each of the European Union member states. And that helped us to get in contact and not only pass on the information, but also to receive the input from the various stakeholders. The benefits of this quite in-depth multilingual multi-stakeholder approach is that we have over these 7 years we have basically built a model based on consensus, which means that most of the changes that we have implemented for the .eu top-level domain, they had quite a broad consensus. And two clear examples are when we introduced IDNs in December 2009. Before introducing IDNs, just to give you an example, we have consulted with each of the different academic networks or academia in the 27 member countries to understand what were the official characters in each of the languages, official languages of the European Union. And then we have also consulted our registrars to make sure that they were going to support, if not all, some of them, the scripts we were going to introduce for IDNs. And the same happened when we introduced last year a fully automated process for the trade and transfer procedure. We went through over 18 months consultation at different levels with the regulator, the European Commission, but also with our registrars. And the most amazing thing is that when we launched the new trade and transfer fully automated process for .eu domain names on 21st November 2012, we did not receive one single complaint about the new process. On the contrary, we have been receiving compliments by all registrars and regulators, our primary stakeholders, and even registrants about the smooth introduction and the fact that we have outreached all our stakeholders. So it's a big challenge for us. We are really a special registry. Sometimes you wish we are regulated in a different way, but at the same time it's a challenge that for us means we should do always better. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Giovanni. It's, as you say, a very different and interesting model covering a whole region. Now it's Vika's turn. Vika will be, of course, presenting Zadna's and .CZA's case. Thank you, Vika.
Thank you, Carolina. I'm going to do a quick, hopefully a quick presentation on the ZA case of multi-stakeholder governance within a city LDF. Three slides. The first slide just loosely point out the key stakeholders for ZA. This is city LD. Obviously, one on the light blue there, that's a ZNA, the ZA Domain Name Authority, which is the city LD manager. And is a statutory entity that regulates and manages South Africa's internet namespace .za. By nature and by requirement, by law of the law that founds this entity, ZNA is required to be consultative in its decision making and in its regulation of the namespace. Some of the key players are mapped out there. For example, the SLDs, that stands for second level domains, because that's the model we utilize. The administrators and the operators or the second level registry operators are our key stakeholder. We also have the registrants, the domain name holders, is obviously our key stakeholder as well, participating in different ways through consultations, workshops, and any other press releases we may release when we consult on particular issues. We also have registrars, and then we have the DOC, which is the Department of Communication locally. In terms of challenges that we had in the past, and some of them still come from time to time, we have had a problem of limited participation in our in our internet governance model, where you find that historical, and in fact also it's probably wrong to say historical only, but historical and present participants dominate, make inputs, make proposals, give feedback, and you do not see a bigger pool of people coming into the space. It is obviously changing, albeit at a slow pace, and we are from time to time starting to see our events attracting a bit more participants of different background. Internet governance education as well is one area of challenge where for us. We are this year working on education and awareness about the internet, the domain names and issues involved in the internet, in the hope that one of the particular benefits that will flow from that will be a widely or a bigger pool of people who are educated in terms of what internet governance entails so that they can come and play a role. Sometimes you also have a problem of limited synergies between role players in the namespace, not only not just the people within who are directly affected by .za operation and regulation, but also other ICT organizations in the country where what they do overlaps with what we do, but there's no communication between what we do and what they do. And also, there is also a challenge of a limited role of ZETNA, the regulator, because the Act focuses purely our operation on the ZA domain. There have been calls from time to time of increasing or expanding our role to cover certain issues that flow from this, from the internet in general. The benefits we've seen so far of including the stakeholders we have currently has been inclusivity, and we think that going forward that will increase. We'll see more and more stakeholders and people, especially from civil society and consumer organizations, coming into play. We also see one benefit of a stakeholder voice in key issues in ZA, and of course the adherence to democracy, which is representative governance, which is an important dimension of our system of democracy in South Africa, that government consults broadly and has structures in different areas of its role, where it consults with different players, organized labor, organized business, and civil society, and so forth. So we also see that a benefit coming into play, and obviously education and awareness, more and more people getting aware of what is entailed in running an AIM space and then the internet as a whole. And also we are starting to see a benefit of having people meaningful participation in international fora such as your ICANN and IGF. Slowly we are moving away from a scenario where at ICANN it was just a few, myself and probably a couple of other faces that formed ZA. You are starting to see more and more people from ZA or from South Africa coming to participate at ICANN and the Internet Governance Forum. That will be all from me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vika. And now it's the turn of our last presenter. He's Pierre Bonny from Afrinic, and he will be presenting how .fr is working with other stakeholders in the French internet ecosystem. Thank you, Pierre.
Thank you. So this is a presentation about the multi-stakeholder approach within AFNIC. Just for the record, AFNIC is a non-for-profit organization. It's not a governmental agency. But it has a lot of links and ties with the public authorities in France. So how do we work? We are responsible both for the policies and for the technical operation. And we discuss these policies or the technical changes with various committees, a committee open to all the registrars that are members of AFNIC. They are not always members of AFNIC. They can be registrar of the registry without getting involved in the discussions of the policy. The users committee, whether they are individuals or commercial users. And after having discussed with these two committees, we usually launch some public consultations, more about registry policies than about technical policies. And then when we have whether a consensus or one or two major scenarios, we go to our board, and our board is made of government representatives, representatives from the registrar community, and representatives from the internet users, and representatives also from our foreign counterparts, because we have one member who is representing foreign registries that are involved with AFNIC. So now, to the challenges. We have a strong participation of the government, and it's a good thing. But sometimes the other stakeholders think that because the government is strong within AFNIC, they will not be listened, and it's useless to discuss too much, because at the end of the day, the government is going to take the decision. So sometimes difficult to have real discussions or real debates because of this fear that the people will not be heard. And frankly, it's a perception, because within the ethnic ecosystem, we can have long and large debates. The other challenge is with the individual users. I think this is something we share with .za, because it was a little bit what you said before. We are open to individual users within our board and within ethnic generally, but sometimes we like the organized individual users, and it's a little bit like if we are lucky, we have a very good one, and if we are unlucky, we have individual users that don't represent much. But for now, we have excellent individual users representatives in our board. As for the .fr management, because Ethnic is mainly the .fr registry, we have answered the call for tender by the government, and we have a contract that is very precise on how to manage .fr, which means that for now the multi-stakeholder approach on the main changes that could occur about the management of .fr, this multi-stakeholder approach is a little bit conflicted by the fact that we have to stick to a contract that we have at with the government that has not been negotiated with the whole community. So it's a bit of restricting the multi-stakeholder approach. But the benefits now. The government involvement makes it easy to focus on the public interest. And that's true that that's easier to talk about the development of internet in France when you have the government in the board than if you only discuss with the your private customers. The diversity of the participation in the board and in AFNIC allow us to facilitate the building of cooperation between the different actors. There is an example that is the Observatory of the French Internet Infrastructure Resilience that gather a security agency from the government, academics and AFNIC. And it gives a platform to engage the dialogue before the international discussions, especially on internet governance. This is something we have not done last month, but we are considering strengthening the debate and the preparation of the international discussions, such as international discussions in ITU or in ICANN. And with that, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pierre. And this was our last presentation in this panel session. And since we only have 4 minutes, I would like to open the floor to 3 questions. I mean, very up to the point, if possible. And they will be answered at the end by the panelists. Yes, please.
Good afternoon, all. My name is Ugo. I'm from .ng. Please, I have a number of questions here. I want to find out how best to handle the issue of limited participation from the stakeholders. We run a membership, ours is a membership organization too, multi-stakeholder. We have a government representative on the BOT, and then we have the various ISPs and all of that. but you find out that when it's time, you want to review the constitution, for instance, you send out notice, and there's no response after a given period of time, okay? There's a call for a review in policy, and then you send out notice and ask for participation, and you get none, even from the registrar constituency, okay? And then after a while, it's passed. And then shortly after, somebody comes complaining, oh, I don't like this. This member of the board shouldn't be a registrar. He sits on the board and he's a registrar as well. And you tell them, but you had the opportunity to raise this in the course of the review of the constitution or the policy review, and you didn't do anything about it. So how best do we handle this? That's one. Then this is specifically to TZ. You said you have a legislation that entities in Tanzania should adopt .tz. I want to ask how effective that has been. We have considered taking that line, but we have oppositions because people feel it's better you persuade people to adopt .ng rather than use an executive fiat to get them to do that. The other one is let me ask for countries that have opened up the second level. We recently did that. We opened up the second level in the month of April, and I think in June or so, I discovered that somebody had registered .ng.ng. That's .ng.ng. And I felt that in direct conflict with .ng because we are the managers. So I want to know other people's opinions as CCTLD managers. Thank you.
Yes, Yangam Lee has a question. So.
Thank you very much for all your presentations. I was thinking that after all the presentations, I would be able to have like a spectrum of maybe the degree of freedom from government or the extent of civil participation. But actually, it's not that easy to distinguish. But some of you did mention the role of governments. Some of you, I actually have a question about how strong an influence the government has in your policies. So, for example, with .nl, you said that the government has, you are a very independent entity, but you do try to maintain a very good relationship with the government, right? So, so how strong an influence does the government actually have in your policies? That's so. I'd actually like to ask the same question to .tz because you said, you seem to be emphasizing a very multi-stakeholder approach, but the legislation that was just mentioned, mandating people to use .tz, that's not allowing people enough freedom. So I would like to ask what I think are maybe two very different approaches of the government.
Thank you very much. So, panelists, we have 4 minutes to address these questions. So, for the sake of keeping the schedule, let's try to be brief and sharp. Thank you.
Okay. I would like to respond to Ugo's query about the, for example, the example he gave about the registrar being in the board. I think this is the issue of governance within a specific CCTLD. If you allow the registrar to be in the board, that depends on the policy. But basically, you understand that the registrar has some requirements to the registry. So being in the board, I think he might have created some issues. So I don't know how you handle. But coming back to the issue of the legislation, it depends on how you take it. I said that this legislation was passed in 2010. And basically what the registry we are doing, we are not imposing. We are trying to send out the message on the values on .tz, not imposing. And this can be compared with the issue of SIM card registration. Initially when it started, most people were not willing to register their SIM card. But when it came to be used on mobile money, they saw the value of being registered. So we are taking the same approach on communicating the values rather than imposing the registration of .tz. Because if you impose, the end result might be someone registering a domain name but not use it. And we have few examples. So we are going very tactically to have this legislation working. And basically the idea is towards the localization of traffic, and you can localize the traffic if you are using the .coms. And that's why even in my presentation I stated the issue of fruit hosting. This was for the sake of localizing the traffic. And this fruit is connected to an internet exchange point. So using a .tz with the IXP and the fruit server within the country, at least you try to localize the traffic. That was the idea. But basically you need to be tactical in terms of marketing on the use of .tz using the legislation. And this way, I don't see that we are limiting the freedom of someone to use a .com or a .whatever, because we are telling him the values, okay, before imposing. And the values are clear, because even the cost minimization will be realized by the user himself. That's what I can comment or respond.
Thank you. Roloff, I think you have to answer one of the questions, yes.
So shall I start with the one from Yung Hum Lee about the influence of the government? If it's about our naming policy, the influence of our government in principle is just as large or small as any other stakeholder. So they participate in our domain name debates and they give us their opinion on certain matters. If it's about there's certain other fields where I think they have more influence, especially if it's in the field where there's regulation or legislation. So the privacy aspects of our WHOIS policy, for instance, their government organizations have a significant influence because we have to adhere to regulations and existing legislation. If it's about if we would undertake activities that would pose a significant risk for SIDN, for instance, financial risk or any other risk related to our continuity, that would be definitely something that would cause a lot of pressure on us from our government. If we would decide to move our offices to Belgium, that would be a no-go. Although there is no formal influence, and I'm not mentioning Belgium because all the other countries would be okay. Any country other than where Dutch law applies would be a no-go zone. So there are certain aspects where our government will put a lot of force on us, a lot of pressure on us, and would probably not hesitate to come up with emergency legislation or something. But my experience so far is where they made such points, it was always with the interests of the other stakeholders in mind. So not a specific government interest other than protecting the, if this exists, the public interest, the interests of the other stakeholders of the local internet community. Can I also react to that point on how do you involve your other stakeholders?
Because I think that's a very relevant issue. I mean, engaging...
Yeah, for us it is. Because we set our policy, like I said, with these domain name debates. And of course, it's very easy to get participation from the registrars. It's normally quite easy to get participation from government institutes, from the regulator. But it gets definitely more difficult to get participation from organizations that represent consumers, for instance. And Well, probably the best way to get a lot of participation is to do something terribly wrong, because that's very often the silence comes from satisfaction, and as long as everything goes more or less okay, people are not very interested to spend a lot of time on you, and if you do something wrong, then suddenly everybody gets interested. What we also found out is that getting known better helps. If the larger community knows your organization and knows what your role is, then they would probably be more interested to participate in discussions about how you fulfill that role. But I think the problem of many registries is that we're not very known by the larger public. So I recognize the problem. As far as I know, there's no clear solution other than inviting them and seeking publicity and making sure that your organization gets known. And I think the best way to get known is, of course, in a positive way.
Thank you. We have one or two more minutes, so if any other panelists... Yes, Pierre, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to react to the question of our Nigerian colleague about the involvement of the whole community. I think this is a problem for a lot of us, in fact. And maybe a way is to make a distinction between the role of animating the debate on the internet, which is within the mandate, for instance, of AFNIC as a network information center, and the managing of the CCTLD itself. Because if we regularly organize debate on big issues related to internet, whether it is about privacy or international questions, some people will come regularly. As Rolf said, they will not have a huge interest to go into the details of the management of the .fr if they are happy with it. But the first step is to involve them, and then after maybe they will have more interest on our core business, which is the national CCTLD.
Well, thank you very much to the floor and the panelists for what was a very interesting panel session, and I think there's lots of food for thought and examples to be taken from these panel sessions. So thank you all. Thank you, panelists.
Okay, so thank you very much for that. We managed to give you a bit more extra time, because there's nothing worse than hearing presentations and then not being able to have a discussion about some of the issues. So I didn't want to cut that too short. Maybe it's a good place to say there is a CCNSO meeting survey that we circulate at the end of each day. If that discussion is something you'd like to continue at our next meeting, maybe as a panel discussion as opposed to presentations, can you please make that suggestion in your meeting survey report so we will have some ideas? It felt as though we cut it short, but equally you may have had enough. We need to know your views either way. Okay, so we're going to move swiftly on to a discussion around the IDN CCPDP voting. But
thank you. I had hoped when we were in Beijing that we could avoid this discussion, but unfortunately we can't. There are just two things about it. Say the statistics, so what happened, and then some issues we as a secretariat have encountered, and then at the end of the presentation, some steps we're going to take over the next voting on the PDP, which will be from the 24th of July until the 22nd. So I hope this time everybody votes. Okay, the votes. This is the reason why it didn't happen. total membership of voters at the time was 136. We had 137 members, but I think it was Paraguay, PY, that joined during the voting process and therefore was excluded of voting. Out of the 136, 68 needed to vote, and we only had 65. I can tell you, Gabi and I were very frustrated. We set up for our laptops in the evening until 2 a.m., and that was one of the... Fortunately, my wife was not at home, so I had a stiff drink. The voting per region on a member's base... In Africa, 12%, or the total contribution. Of Africa, 12%, Asia Pacific, 32%, Europe, 22%. You can read this, and it will be available, but it's the input per region. Now, this is the more interesting part. The number of votes per region. So, per region, we have a certain number of members, and out of that member, so in Africa, we have 29 members. Of these 29 members, only 8 voted. So 21 of the of the African members did not vote. Asian Pacific, again, this was a clear split. Number of votes, 21. Number of non-votes, 21. So out of 42. Now, again, this for Asian Pacific, there is a clear sub-regional spread as well. So, but we didn't want to. That's clear as well. Europe, again, 19. But this is over the 50% threshold. So, in that sense, they did what they needed to do. But 18 did not vote, and 19 voted. Latin America and Caribbean, again, number of votes was 13, number of non-votes 12, again over average, and this was the positive example. All our North American members voted. Now, the interesting thing is that of the North American, in principle, they have nothing to do with IDNs. So that's a good thing. But at least, so it's... So, now, the issues we've seen, and this is probably the major one we've encountered during the process, is contact details of representative of the member. For your information, the CCNSO has a representative who votes in the CCNSO. Because we hardly vote, or hardly even during election periods, that contact or that representative does not receive a lot of emails. And what you see is, over years, the contact details became incorrect. Sometimes, and that's again what is happening, is people update their contact details with IANA, and then they think automatically the CCNSO membership contacts will be updated. No, that's not the case, because they are separate and different contact details and different people. The representative, or in IANA, it's either the admin or tech contact. That could be somebody completely different, and that is than the representative in the CCNSO. One of the reasons... Again, what we've seen is persons listed as representative have left the organizations or changed their jobs. And they haven't, because again, it's hardly used, they haven't thought about of changing the name of the representative. So we send out tallies, etc., to the representative while he sometimes is not in the organization anymore or doesn't receive the emails anymore, etc. That's what we see now. So there is... it needs to be updated. And one of the things, especially Gabi encountered, is even if you think you are the primary contact, and there are some examples, do not take it for granted. During the process, Gabi had to update the contact details because it showed that the person who thought he or she was the representative was not listed as such in the contact database and therefore did not receive the tally or the voting mechanism. So please, please, during this week, check your contact details with Gabi. She'll be around tomorrow afternoon to make sure that for the next round, the contact details are in fact correct. A second set of issues is spam filters. What we've heard and seen is people use spam filters, and as soon as something comes in like tally at ICANN.org, which includes the ballot and needs to be confirmed, it disappears in a black hole. People do not receive the tally as such, and because they're not aware that there is a tally, they do not respond to Gabi, say, look, I didn't receive it. So it is, again, please be aware this is happening. If you have not received the tally at a certain point in time, especially when Gabi announces they are sent out, then contact Gabi again to make sure that it's sent out, first of all, to the correct person, and secondly, that you received a tally, so that you know when to receive it and looking your spam filters. One of the more underlying issues I think we've encountered, these were more the logistical and administrative issues, is the awareness of voting. I think if you would really look at the numbers, you see there are sub-regions where the awareness of voting is very limited, at least with the representatives. So, and that has to do probably with people who are not able and not engaged in the CCNSO activities as such, because there is a core of people that attend these meetings, there is a core of people that react to emails, and then we have a more outer layer of membership who is more passive, but they have and rightfully so, I think, they are able to vote. But if they are not aware for whatever reason that they received the votes or what they're voting on, then there is a major issue. And this is one of the underlying issues, and I'll get back to that one. So what we just, on the awareness of voting, and then this shows it, say we conducted, what we announced in Beijing, we conducted a webinar. I think 4 people attended that webinar. It was later on posted on the website. Okay. Several emails from the secretariat, Twitter and Facebook. So it's more a question, what can we do to increase the voting? Now some proposed changes for the next round. Community and council members and secretariat will be informed on progress of voting by Gabi, who will manage the voting process. Secretariat and councils will approach members individually during that process, because it appeared that this helps. And there will be an illustration on the website on how to check and update your own contact details. That was it.
Okay. Thank you, Bart. If anyone has any ideas how to improve turnout, they would be very welcomed. And also, as Bart suggested, can I encourage you to check your contact details whilst you are here with Gabi this week? That would be really appreciated. It's slightly embarrassing to have an exam fail on a vote. I know we don't vote that often, but just 3 votes, oh, so close. So we've got to go over that for next time round. Thank you very much, Bart. Much appreciated. Okay, so let's move on. Our next item on the agenda is the ATRT 2 update, for which I did see Brian loitering briefly at the back. And then I lost him. It looks like Olivier's gone to get him. Thank you very much. So whilst we are being joined by the ATRT, let me just briefly introduce the item. I'm sure Brian will speak to the review as chair. But we were provided with a a rather impressive number of questions from the ATRT just the other day that have been circulated to the council and members and community list. The ATRT is understandably very keen to receive our feedback, but unfortunately we were struggling with time, as always seems to be the case this week, to fit in a long session with the ATRT. So what we've suggested is the best use of this time is for an introduction, for us to understand, remind us of the scope of your work, and to maybe get some input from members as to the things that you think are most important to you. And then what we will do is ask you to submit feedback on the questions separately to the ATRT. But over to you, Brian.
Thank you very much, Leslie, and thank you for your time today. I'll be brief so we can get the benefit of your thoughts. ATRT2's scope of work involves reviewing ICANN's implementation of the prior three review teams, ATRT1, the WHO is review team, Security, Stability, and Resiliency review team. So how well has ICANN implemented the recommendations of those review teams? We are also going to look at some new issues. And thirdly, we're going to provide recommendations on the review process itself. Is this process working well? Are there ways it can be improved? That's our mandate. The questions we provided you, questions 1 through 6, represent questions that have come to top of mind for us at this point in our work. The rest of the questions, 7 and on, reflect questions that we formulated after reading public comment that we've received to date on our questionnaire. As Leslie noted, your input on these questions is welcome at any time. In terms of our timetable, we'll be issuing proposed final recommendations and a report in mid-October for public comment. You'll have an opportunity to comment on that. We issue our final report to the board by December 31st. If you wish us to consider inputs for the proposed final recommendations that we publish in mid-October, we'd ask that you provide inputs by mid-September timeframe. With that, I'd like to open the floor.
Okay, and I should highlight that we have the CCNSO representatives to the ATRT as well, which give us another channel of communication and both dissemination and getting feedback back as well. Okay, so, and I see Alice probably distributing list of questions or something else. List of questions, I thought they might be. Okay, what areas are we most interested in, please? Do we not have an interest in security and stability at all? So just a check if you're awake. Okay, maybe just start the ball rolling, Brian. Obviously, security and stability, I suspect, might be an interest of this community. But I did want to ask one question. So the CCNSO has a little bit of fixation on strategy and finance for some strange reason. To what extent is financial accountability and transparency covered within the ATRT's purview?
Thank you, Leslie. We've been hearing from a number of different parts of the community the question about finance and ICANN's management of its finances in two different ways. One, with respect to the windfall, if you will, that ICANN's received from the new TLD application process. And then secondly, just in terms of general management and administration of its finances. Within the AOC, it's not perfectly clear, to be honest. And we are trying to sort through exactly whether that falls within our scope. Our mandate is in paragraph 9.1, if you're interested to know the scope of our work. But we are hearing clearly from the community finance from both of those perspectives, and we're considering if and how we might address that in our report.
Lise, do you want to speak to, from your perspective, potential areas to CC colleagues? From your perspective, the areas that will be of most interest to CCNSO colleagues?
Well, I find that most of the areas are going to be interesting for us because this is about the whole accountability and transparency of ICANN as an institution. And it's also about how the processes are managed within ICANN. So I find most of our work is going to be relevant to this group too.
And Demi, you're the other CCNSO representative. Did you wish to add anything? Okay, Katrina, did you have a remote question?
Yes, Peter van Roster is wondering if there will be an online survey.
We issued an online questionnaire for public comment that we admit was very long and in some ways difficult to manage, and we apologize for that. One of the reasons it was as long as it was is because we have so much to review in terms of subject matter. The three prior reviews alone represent a pretty large amount of information. So we apologize for the length. We did hear some complaints about the survey timing out. We did receive 30 comments, and those were welcome. The next up, let me step back. CCNSO should feel free to provide inputs. We'll have an email address on the wiki on the ICANN website for ATRT2. You have these questions, and frankly, if there are other issues you felt we wanted to know, you're free to submit comments to us. The next opportunity to comment will be after we issue the proposed final recommendations.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess the question, probably knowing Peter, was around the will these comments be turned into a questionnaire, a survey? But I'm attempting to transmit thoughts to Peter to let me know if that's the correct interpretation.
Yes.
I misunderstood. Apologize, I misunderstood. What we will do with the comments is read them, assess them in relation to our work, and when we issue our report, you will see that our analysis will be punctuated with citations to comments that we've received that will be used to reflect back that we've heard from the community and that underpin any conclusions that we reach. We think that's important for us to show, and we're talking now about how we're going to organize the comments in an annex, and the form of that isn't clear yet, but we want to definitely put that back as part of our report.
Okay, so there is potential to turn this question list into a survey. Yeah, okay. Lisa?
Well, you asked before about special issues with special interest for this group. Well, you raised yourself ICANN's outreach and strategy for the WISs, and that's actually one of the things we're looking into. Should we evaluate on is ICANN being representative enough as an organization?
Excellent. Okay. Rolof. Was that you waving or you were pointing to somebody else? Just waving.
In general, I think that ICANN is really trying hard to improve on those matters where it received comments from the ATRT before. As maybe you know, I'm the chair of one of the working groups of the CCNSO, the Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group. And from that perspective, my special interest would be on how ICANN deals with public comments and how public comment periods are being planned and how or not that planning is being adhered to. What we often see is that the documents that we are to comment upon are published later than previously announced. Sometimes the comments period is extended, sometimes not. But also on the comments, we find very often so far that we get marginal reply or no reply at all. And there are quite a few comments that we think are very good comments, and we've been repeating and repeating and repeating. So I think, well, in my opinion, there is, and that's my opinion as chair of that working group, there's room for improvement there. That will be one of the areas of special interest for me.
Thank you, Rolf. I saw him capturing it as you spoke. Okay. Anyone else? Demi? No? Okay.
Thank you for that question on the comments. In fact, there were recommendations from ATRT1 that ICANN adopt a comment and reply comment cycle, that ICANN implement a stratification and prioritization process, and we are looking at how well they've implemented. Here's the important part. We can look at the fact that ICANN implemented a comment and reply comment cycle and prioritization and stratification, and say, well, they implemented the recommendation, but what matters is the effect. And so what we're still hearing from the community is that the process, there's too many consultations, there's challenges with clarity, what happens to my comments when they're received. We continue to hear those comments. We will be focusing on those areas because it's really about the effect of the implementation of the recommendations that's important. So inputs that you have on that specifically would be very helpful.
I think one of the very recent examples is that in when we had the ICANN meeting in Beijing, ICANN launched this strategic discussion thing with the, was it four question areas, I think, where we could respond to? So as SOP we did, and so far we haven't received any feedback on that, but we are now in the second round of this strategic dialogue with 8 points where input is asked. And while we have no idea where these 8 points really come from and what were the comments that I can receive from the first phase of this discussion. So that makes it very unclear.
I mean, as chair, if I can just support that comment, I think one of the things we're a pain in the neck on is repeating comments that we've made previously because we still haven't heard any response to them. Maybe the ATRT will be able to draw on some examples of best practice elsewhere, or what springs to mind is one of the occasions in one of the GTLD consultations where ICANN put a great deal of effort into saying what they had heard and then saying what they did with that feedback. There was an example somewhere that I recall in the distant past where I know there was some great analysis work done, and people who provided comments were able to see what was done in those comments and whether they were taken on board, or equally there was somebody else who commented the opposite. Yeah. Donna, did I see your hand up at the back there? You're waving. Hello? Lots of people waving today. Okay. Demi, you wanted to add something to that?
Thank you, Lizzie. Just to add what Brian said, really we are eager to get comments from the input from the community, and we will be very careful in giving much value to these comments. And for sure, part of our work is to recommend to the board how we'll deal with this very important input. But I'm quite optimistic that the things are going right away. But anyway, it will be extremely important to get input from the community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Temi. Brian?
Thank you very much, Leslie, and thank you all. We really appreciate the time that you had today. Again, we will be issuing proposed final recommendations in mid-October. We welcome your inputs. By mid-September, please, if you want that factored into that report, and then final report by December 31st. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Okay, so to conclude, lastly but by no means loosely, we have Adrian Kindris on the Domain Name Industry Association. While he's coming up, can I just remind you two things. Firstly, that buses to the CCNSO celebration cocktails will be leaving here at 18:30 onwards. I've just seen some of the plans for this evening. It looks great. So let's look forward to that. And secondly, there will be a meeting survey on day one of our meeting that will be sent out very soon, I'm sure. Please can I encourage you to fill that in so we have good input about what has worked well or what has worked not so well today. Adrian.
Thanks, Leslie, and I appreciate that it is late in the day. Thank you very much for accommodating me. For those of you that don't know me, think yourself lucky. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Adrian Kinderis. I am speaking to you today in my capacity as... Wow, did this go all the way forward? Sorry. In my capacity as the chair of the interim board of the Domain Name Association. So I just wanted to quickly provide you with a bit of an update. Tomorrow we will be doing a session. It's a formal session on the schedule. It's at 4 o'clock. Donna, if you're out there, is it 4 o'clock tomorrow? 5 o'clock tomorrow, thank you, where we'll be going into this in some more depth. So I will get through this quickly now, as there will be a session on this tomorrow, if you can make it at 5 o'clock. So... first and foremostly, we wanted to make sure that we understood the definition of the domain name industry. If you haven't seen this, you'll see a little bit more about it tomorrow. I know it's hard to see from where you are. There will be handouts and printouts of this. You might start to see this diagram a little bit more regularly as it was developed in conjunction with ICANN. And what this does is describes defines, if you like, the industry. The outer layer there is the internet coordination layer. The bigger oval that you see is the ICT sector, and the subset within the ICT sector is what we're terming the domain name industry. So it is this domain name industry that we seek to represent within the association. So who is the domain name industry? Well, it's a non-profit global business association that represents the interests of the domain name industry. Importantly, we have zero affiliation with ICANN. We are not funded by ICANN. This has certainly been circulated with FADI. I've sat down and gone through this, and the staff, they support us, but we are not affiliated. And that'll be important as we in an industry seek to have a united voice that sometimes... may not be aligned with ICANN as we go about our business. So the members of the Domain Name Association are the groups, businesses and individuals that are involved in the provision, support and sale of domain names. Hence why I'm speaking to you today. This is not about being contracted to ICANN. This is not about being just a registrar or an ICANN-accredited registrar. If you are involved in the provisioning of domain names, then you are welcome to come and join the Domain Name Association. So all of you here would be welcome. And that includes registries, registrars, resellers, and, of course, registry service providers. So what is our mission then? The mission is to promote the interests of the domain name industry by advocating the use, adoption and expansion of domain names as the primary tool for users to navigate the internet. So what we're doing here, folks, is sort of helicoptering out. We all sit here and we talk about the policy of domain names and new GTLDs and so on and so forth. But what we want to do is make sure that there is a body that is ensuring that domain names continue to exist full stop, and that they remain relevant to those that interact with the internet. There are many ways now to navigate the internet through apps, through search, so on. We want to make sure that we're protecting our interests here, and clearly you are aligned there. A lot of what I just said is contained in here, and I can probably get through a lot of these slides quickly, so I'll keep moving through. The middle one here is probably the key, folks. The intent of the Domain Name Association is to build trust, exchange ideas, educate and raise awareness of domain-related issues. You'll see other industries. The ANA is a good one, and the way they've been able to lobby the new GTLD program. So really, when there is something within the industry that requires comment, we'd like to have the Domain Name Association put forward as someone that represents the interests of the industry. And whether that be through media, for example, and commenting on particular things, or indeed lobbying to government or various other bodies, we get to do it in a with a unified voice. So very quickly, this all started from a group of colleagues that decided that, in my experience, at least in the 12 years that I've been involved in this industry, this hasn't been done before. There hasn't been an effort to try to unify all that are within the value chain of the domain name industry. So we got together, and the reason I explain that is because you'll see there is a little bit of a North American focus here, but I don't want that to grab your attention. What I want you to grab the attention is that these folks here have put themselves forward as members of the interim board, and that was by self-selection at this point in time. So for my sins, I was put forward as the chair, and I think it's got more to do with my accent than my capabilities, but largely we are pushing for an international feel here. Anyways, Jeff Eckhouse, Rob Hall, Staten Hammock, Job Lawrence from Google, John Nevitt from Donuts, and Elizabeth Sweezy from Fairwinds have all come forward to roll up their sleeves and at least get some momentum into the Domain Name Association. All of us will stand down as interim board members once the membership structure is in place, and there will be the usual election of board members that you would see with any association. But at the moment, these are the guys that are putting their hands rolling up their sleeves, getting their hands dirty, and indeed putting their hands in their pockets to get the work done. So what have we done so far? We have officially incorporated in Delaware. Now, you just heard me, my last sentence, talk about the internationalisation of the Domain Name Association, and here we are incorporating in Delaware, United States. For those of you that know me, you'll know that I'm quite an advocate for an international, I hate the North American Wide Web, or at least the feel. So we're working hard to internationalise. But one thing we did have to take advantage of was the legal service we had on hand that was pro bono in order to get moving. As you would understand, in the embryonic stages of the association, we don't have the funding as yet to go and seek outside efforts. So we've done it with pro bono work and largely from some of those members that you've seen on the interim board. And secondly, as we go to get that first round of funding, we'll probably rely on some of the bigger industry players, and a lot of them just happen to be located in North America, and there are tax benefits to be donating to a non-profit entity. Thanks. What else have we done? The charter and initial bylaws have been adopted. We've got our membership structure currently being developed, and of course we've got our budget that we're coming together to try to work out how much money we'll require. We've got an educational website, which I'll get to in a second, and we've developed our own website, which a lot of this content is available on, thedna.org, and of course, like all good companies, we went and spent time on getting a logo done. I'll leave the benefits for the session tomorrow. I think we've probably covered a lot of this. This is the educational website, and this is something that you can utilise today. When it goes up, it'll go up tomorrow. It'll be available in 6 different languages. From the outset, and I must thank the team at Google for building this site. They have dedicated a lot of funds to this, but it is a tool that all of us will be able to use in pointing people to that is agnostic, but also allows to very simple language to talk about how the domain names, what domain names are, and how the industry works. And that's not the website of the association, as I said earlier. So the next steps, and lastly, we've got to get this budget done, transition to a formal board. We want to get a campaign going to let people know about who we are and what we're doing, get the membership drive, and then launch our educational website and get that up. I should say the domainname.org will also be translated into those 6 languages as well. And that's all I had, so sorry if I was a little over time.
You're only about 30 seconds, don't worry. Okay, so where do we go for further information apart from to the session tomorrow?
Just at the bottom of that slide there. Oh, you can't see it. Hang on, if I do that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and then it went away.
Briefly.
TheDNA.org is where we want to go.
Okay, so we will put your presentation on the CCNSO website, so colleagues who haven't been able to attend the session can find that information. Thank you very much, Adrian. Thank you, everyone who managed to stay till the very end. And I look forward to seeing you this evening. Thank you very much.